Hey guys, this is Cole Weicker.
Hi, I'm Neil Collins.
This is Jochen Graf.
And you're listening to The Unused Substitutes.
The Unused Substitutes.
The Unused Substitutes.
Hey there, little Red Riding Hood, I...
Ball's gonna bounce down. It's free in the box. Bicycle kick! Goal! Roddy's! What a play! What a shot! And it's 1-0 Roddy's!
Good evening, everyone, and thank you for joining us again tonight. You are listening to the Unused Substitute Show. We are your unquestioned green and gold gospel, your only source for year-round Rowdies coverage. We are live on Radio St. Pete Online and part of the Beautiful Game Network, presented in part by Roughneck Scarves. My name is Stephen Cundiff. We had a full slew of games this week. We've got a full crew on the radio tonight. I am joined, of course, by everybody, Matthew Cox, Daniel Undanino. Gentlemen, how are we doing tonight, aside from the obvious that we're all wearing golden yellow shirts?
I just wanted to point out, we totally did not coordinate this. This was just, I literally just threw this on about 2 minutes before I hopped on the call. I'm impressed. It's called fashion, sweetie. Look it up.
I mean, Steven's chewing a granola bar. I think I just pulled this out of the laundry to for his shirt. I don't know if this is fashion or pandemic, but, doing well.
Okay, hold on. I've been wearing this shirt all day long, and both of
probably
you guys basically just implied that you've been shirtless as of like 20 minutes ago. Would you like to comment?
I just got home from work and the gym and the grocery store, and I changed clothes before coming on here. So, yeah.
I was just lazy and didn't shower until like a half hour ago. So
I still have to do that tonight.
Dan, you weren't chasing people off your lawn?
Well, yeah, I mean, I had that incident. So, but I was still in my work clothes for that. So.
Yes. Fear the pinch a penny guy.
Fear the pool boy.
He's gonna
always
get you.
Fear the pool boy.
He's gonna get you.
Dan, I do have some. I have some major news that I need to share because it's relevant to you, or you will appreciate it.
If it's more anti-Italian propaganda, I'll hang up.
He's not Italian, but it's not anti-Italian. At least Fox Mulder, born on this day in 1961. Happy birthday, Fox Mulder.
I'm gonna go UFO hunting tonight in his honor. I don't have to work tomorrow.
The truth is out there. And by truth, I mean poutine and candy corn.
Well, that's just gross.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, I do have my MUFON field investigator's manual right here. So if you want to go UFO, we have an official manual.
I feel like if there's anywhere in Florida to, and I say this just in general knowledge, but also having been to your place before, like the Pasco area is probably a pretty damn good place to go UFO hunting.
Yeah, we can just go off the coast and see what happens out there. But yeah, I do have my field investigator's manual here, so we can go investigate some sightings. Steven looks so confused, disappointed, and...
Okay. I got to clarify. I'd never heard of MUFON, the Mutual UFO Network. So,
yeah.
That's a thing. This
it is.
This podcast episode has certainly taken a turn into the bizarre.
Earlier than usual.
Speaking of things going bizarre, I heard, thanks to a little Tweety Bird known as Matthew Cox, that we have a new patron to celebrate tonight.
Oh, we do. Gosh, I totally forgot to like. Man,
it's only on the notes.
New patron. Let me finish up with that. I tried to do a lot of this stuff last night because I knew it was going to be a close call getting home and getting a dinner and everything in time. All right. Joining at the $20 level, which gets you, like, you get to skip the line for your first executive producer credit. Shout out to Amanda Ranville Lowell, who joined, I think, like, yesterday, maybe? I just happened to see the email pop up when I was going through 5,000 emails now that I have a working computer again. So, awesome. Very, very stoked to see that.
Thank you so much, Amanda, for becoming a patron at that level. That is amazing. We mention it at the end of every show. We mention it at the beginning of every show. Patreon is always the best way to help us out. It's always the best way to support what we do here, because this stuff isn't free. You know, the cost for the pod episodes to put them up and host them and the website and everything, that stuff has costs. Helping us out on Patreon, make sure it's not coming out of our pockets completely, let alone equipment. You know, I mean, let's face it, we've all heard how Dan sounds on this podcast lately. You know, sometimes equipment is things that we need to buy, and, you know, Patreon is legitimately the best way, though. We do thank you very much, Amanda, for becoming a new patron, and we thank all of our patrons as always. If you want to tweet us your thoughts, some comments, the Mothership Twitter handle is @UnusedSubsPod. Also, you can find us on the Facebook page at The Unused Substitutes. You can always let us know what you've got on your mind. If you want some thoughts on us, we do a Q&A session on the podcast. It goes out live on the podcast as part of the radio show. And it also goes out exclusively to our patron members later. So if you want to make sure you have your question heard and read and answered, either become a patron or listen to us live right here. Dan, Matt, some things never change. And this week kind of felt like one of those weeks of things that never change. On Thursday night, Tampa Bay Rowdies host Charleston Battery. And we, in a game that at times was probably a bit closer than it should have been, we come away and handle a 4-2 victory. And then a couple nights later, we go away to Pittsburgh. And basically, like how every game against Pittsburgh at Pittsburgh Highmark Stadium pretty much ends, the Rowdies came away as a 2-0 loser. Now, there's tons of context. Let's dive into it. We've got a packed show tonight. What are your thoughts about the Battery game? Let's start with there. Let's start on a good note. What are some of the initial thoughts coming away from that match?
I thought we played really well. We looked like a Rowdies team that could that can and does compete with anybody in this league, and looked like a team that is going to continue to roll through the playoffs and whatnot. The Battery are no, despite them struggling and probably going to miss the playoffs, they're still a great team, like a solid team. So we can't take anything away. And the fact that we were able to hang four on them is a pretty good sign of where we're at. I one goal was sloppy. Jordan Scarlett back pass own goal. That was not pretty. So the scoreline kind of is a lie in a way. I wouldn't say a lie, but makes it seem closer than it felt. It felt that game was pretty well in hand all game. Mm-hmm. And then the second goal, Matt decided to yell, you know, here comes the rally 30 seconds before they put the ball in the net. So we'll blame him for that one.
The battery player kind of breaks into open field across the midfield line. And I'm like, all right, here comes the rally. And then literally, I want to say like what, two passes later, it's in the goal. And I'm getting the evil stare from basically everybody who had congregated around our pod on the berm.
If Evan Loro misses out on the Golden Gloves for that goal, and that's like the decider, I will send him your address.
I will in turn blame it on the own goal.
So this match had a couple of changes to the starting 11, but you know, it really wasn't a huge difference as far as where these guys lined up. One thing that was noticed, of course, was the fact that, like, Tejada, for example, was in the starting 11 for this match, up top with Gunzotti. Fernandez had been slid over into the middle to give Ekra a break from the starting 11, and that meant that Dalgard switched off to the left side, and Antley came in on the right midfield. Otherwise, it was pretty much the same. You know, Hilton, Wyk, and the back four. I had said on the Twitch pregame show, I also want to make a sidebar. We do acknowledge that the Twitch pregame show has had some technical issues recently. We actually did the show, so it's not like it wasn't attempted or anything. We did an actual 30-minute show. We were originally going to save the file and like upload it to the YouTube page. However, something happened and that file was corrupted, and so we weren't able to actually recover it. Now, we don't know why that happened. The team has been working on the broadcasting this week to try and make sure everything's set up going into this upcoming match. But we did actually, like, the three of us were actually doing a show. We interviewed Jordan Doherty. And
I know. I finally get to wear my Doherty shirt with Jordan Doherty, and there's no proof.
Yeah, we're disappointed.
This is why MUFON exists. This is an X. That episode is an X file now.
I will say this. The Twitch hack that happened, for those that are out of the loop, Twitch had been, you know, compromised as far as their website and their coding. Like, it was an actual coding hack. Twitch went out and basically reset everybody's like streaming key information. Unfortunately, that meant that if you didn't go in there with enough time to reset everything and get all of your information updated to basically link, you know, point A to point B, it meant that your Twitches didn't actually get to broadcast. And that was what was causing the issue, because the computer we were running on hadn't updated that information yet. And that ended up preventing the Twitch stream. And then the file on the back end got corrupted out of our hands and everybody's hands, unfortunately. So just wanted to put that out there. We do intend on broadcasting again this week. And that it's not a sign of us. I know we've had some difficulties lately. It's not a sign of us stopping the show or not wanting to do the show or anything like that. We're going to keep doing it. Just some technical hiccups. So apologies if you were hoping to tune in and watch that Jordan Doherty interview, among other things. Wanted to kind of make sure we acknowledge that to all of our listeners. On that show,
I thought it was just I thought everything went bad because of my my attempts at Spanish.
I mean, there's always that too, but especially on Hispanic night. I mean, sir, you are ruining the vibe of what that night was supposed to. It's a good thing the Rowdies picked up the slack for your deficiencies, but, you know.
I am nothing but vibes. I am being composed of pure vibes at this point in time.
Well, on that show that you unfortunately all didn't get the chance to watch or listen to, I had mentioned that this was a very, very big game for Juan Tejada. a player who has not been able to get on the starting 11 very often this year, and a player who has not been able to get onto the scorecard in any capacity, really, all season. This is after a year where the COVID-shortened season last year had a very significant decline already in his numbers compared to his rookie season, where he had scored, you know, double-digit goals. Grading Tejada's performance. He didn't get any of the assists or the goals coming out of this pass or coming out of that game. Were you guys pleased with his performance individually, or is this a very serious trend, downward trend in your guys' eyes going into the future here for Juan Tejada?
I think the only concern for me is the lack of minutes, of consistent minutes. Strikers especially need to get into the, you know, get their feet under them, play consistent minutes. And I mean, I think his work, obviously his work rate's still there. He's doing a lot. I think Neil's system requires, especially like that second striker, because we see it in Seba as well, tracking back, pressing a bit, making up a lot of ground. I think he needs, I don't know if him and Seba are the best strike partnership. I think they tend to make very similar runs and are very close to each other. So I think they need to probably get more time together again. But I'm not concerned for him individually. I think all the tools are still there. I just think he needs to be able to get more consistent minutes week in and week out, and we'll see that that production return to those rookie year numbers.
Yeah, I don't know if this is a byproduct of the system, but you know, it seems there are certain players, or at least certain formations or systems, where you can step in with very little game time and kind of slot in and show what you're capable of. And it seems like when players, especially with the way Neil's system plays, that if players miss significant time, that it's almost like it takes twice as long to get back into it than when you're out. It takes a lot of time to kind of reacclimate, especially at a game speed. And I don't know if that's because of the emphasis on team defense, as well as the every player's individual roles when it comes to attacking with the ball. No, he's a young guy. He's got plenty of soccer ahead of him. I hope it's in a green and gold uniform. I mean, look, we were on a run for quite a while with the players we had, so there wasn't any dire need to change things up that were working better than we've seen them work in the history of rowdy soccer. And coupled that with, you know, giving him some, which let him and other players at really at the same time kind of work their way back from injury at a pace that would not put them in it at a risk of re-injuring themselves again fairly easily. He'll be okay. There's still some games left to be played here in the regular season. We've got the playoffs. I think he'll make an impact at some point. I still have faith in Juan.
The stat line is interesting for him on the night. In 65 minutes of play, he had 27 touches, which trends, that's actually not too far off the mark of, say, Sebastian Gonzatti on the same night. He had 21 passes total. 20 of them were accurate. So he has a 95% passing success completion number when he departs the field. That's great. I mean, come on. That means that as a player, as he's getting the ball, and again, you think about the position that he's going into. He is, you know, trying to make up for the crazy amount of performance that Dos Santos has put in during the year. And essentially what we're looking at is every time Juan Tejada received the ball, he's able to distribute. He's not giving up possession basically at all. That's a really, really good sign. It's kind of a nuanced thing on his individual performance. Also take into consideration, He won two of the five duels that he had. Not a great number, but certainly nothing terrible. He got, you know, he was fouled once during the match. That's always good. You always, again, it's these abilities to retain possession, different stat lines that help you retain that possession. So he was fouled once. He didn't concede any fouls himself. He went 1-for-2 on aerial duels. And he was never dispossessed, officially speaking, over the course of play. Now, he did have an attempted dribble that didn't succeed, but the numbers were not necessarily like blatantly where he was completely worthless. You know, it's nothing like dire. It's not like he needs to like a 4.0 rating on some 10-point scale. It wasn't spectacular. And I think we're a little jaded a bit when after we see the 10-goal performance of his rookie season that we're all expecting these big things. He's a favorite player of the team, of the fans at least. And, you know, it's frustrating when you don't see him score goals. It's more frustrating when you don't see him getting shots. He had one shot. A striker with one shot in 65 minutes of play. That's concerning. But the fact that he wasn't giving up possession meant that he was still fulfilling a good role. Now, on the flip side of Juan Tejada, you know, singularly being, you know, observed on this match, again, because he hasn't had a lot of minutes, it's one of the only chances we've had to watch him this year, was Leo Fernandez playing as a center attacking mid. Which, at times, was like God tier.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now, I'm going to keep harping on this, mostly because I said it and I really feel I'm right, so I kind of have to just keep reinforcing this. When I said weeks ago, months ago, that we need Leo Fernandez to be more aggressive in the middle of the field, I mean, I wasn't necessarily anticipating him playing as a center attacking mid, but oh my goodness. That boy's a baller, and he absolutely can fill that role.
Yeah, and I think you can do it with Dalgard playing the left and Antley back on the right and just let it fly. I mean, obviously you're trying to get as much talent onto that field as possible, but we have so much talent and versatility. I mean, Dalgard plays left or right. So you can do that. Jan can either be an attacking mid or a little bit of a holding mid. But I think having Leo behind Seba and Dalgard on the left and Antley on the right is just, and Dos Santos as well up top, is just cruel to opponents. I don't know. Like, and then you have Hilton behind them, like him, and it's just, it's not really fair. I mean, and that's not, and Jan Ekra's just as good behind him. Like, we have depth in that role, we have and quality in that role, but right now Leo's the hot hand, like, and he looked, and him and Seba have like ridiculous chemistry on the pitch, like that's, and I think we need to exploit that a little bit by having him play in that like center mid role. But I'm just a dude who drinks Yingling and talks for free onto a microphone.
Fernandez, again, has an amazing night statistically. 40 for 44 passing as an attacking mid. I want to think about that for a number for a second here. 40 for 44. Has 60 touches on the night. One of the biggest complaints that we had about, for instance, Zach Steinberger early in the season when he was playing as the attacking midfielder, because he was the one that had the starting nod for that position, was his basically lack of ability of getting on the ball frequently. There were games where he would have like 15 touches as your center attacking mid. Now, mind you, that was also during the stretch of games that we weren't particularly playing all that well. But you can start to see how this team differs in their look when you have somebody that's more aggressive on receiving the ball and more aggressive on getting himself involved in the play compared to what we saw earlier with Zach. And that performance was amazing. You know, as you mentioned here, when you're taking a player that's been as significant to your team as a left midfielder, and you can put him in the center and then not get any drop-off with the other rotation you do, again, it shows how amazing this team, as a team, they are. Dalgaard comes in, plays left mid, does great. No problems at all with his performance. Connor Antley comes in, hasn't played much in the last couple games leading up into this, and gets two assists on the night. How do you complain about any of this? You know, that's an absolutely spectacular night offensively with those gentlemen. How do you, I mean, you really can't be worried about this team offensively at times when these guys are playing as well as they are. Now, on the flip side, defensively, Scarlett has a bit of a when playing out of the back goes wrong moment.
Mitch.
And we end up giving up two goals. The second goal was arguably a bit of a weird, it was kind of a caught on transition, but it was also Scarlett again kind of losing his man because that ball gets switched from our left side to our right side, which of course Jordan is, you know, the right defender on this team. And of course, so the ball gets played to the guy on his side of the field and Jordan is nowhere to be found. Charleston gets that ball, takes a touch, has all the time in the world and just, you know, picks a side net and you know, at that point it's an easy play. Laurel's not going to have much of a chance at that. And we give up two on the night.
Yeah, but we scored four.
Well, we scored four. Now, mind you, that made it a one-goal game in the 90s.
Really, we scored five, if we want to be honest. Yeah.
But, I mean, you're talking about a team like Charleston, a team that's basically that was out of the playoffs already going into that match for the, you know, for all but the actual clinching of it. And at 90+3, they make it a one-goal game. Kind of a worry, especially when you look ahead to Pittsburgh and you see how defensively we looked against that team. Now, we're not going to skip ahead to Pittsburgh just yet, but the defensive lapses are starting to kind of worry me to a certain point.
We just set a record for longest shutout streak, and you're worried about defense. We gave up, what, four goals, and this last game was on, like, 2 days rest and travel to Pittsburgh. I don't think we need to hit a panic button yet.
So trends matter. Trends matter, right? And obviously we came out of this record-setting scoreless streak. And again, I don't want to get ahead of myself too far here, but we've now given up six goals in four games. Two of them in back-to-backs. With the same back line. So, like I said, we're going to talk about this more against Pittsburgh because Pittsburgh brought in a much different look overall, and it's a different quality opponent to begin with. But, like, Scarlett individually had a bad game for that night. I mean, I think that can be easy to say. For instance, if you're going like a good, bad, ugly, he has my ugly performance on the night.
I don't remember. I couldn't give you one.
I remember is the goal. So, yeah. Dan, I just got to hop in here real quick and break up the train of thought and relevant conversation to point out that there has now been created a Twitter account you must go follow at @TBR_MUFON, the Rowdy's UFO. Tagged us in their one and only tweet and said, "Let's go hunting."
I love Twitter.
I really do love you, jerks. Oh, God, that's amazing. Oh.
So really, yeah. All right. What were we gonna go ahead with, Matt?
I was gonna say the only thing I like distinctly clearly remember about Jordan Scarlett from the Battery game was you know that second goal, which you know like I said we're looking at the scoreline here and saying well we conceded two goals and one was we conceded one goal like I'm not counting the own goal there's no planning for that there's no you know that's gonna happen it hasn't happened very often and we did turn around and get the fourth goal back like a minute later. Like you don't want to concede that goal that late but also you know still in stoppage time to fight and go get a fourth goal when you could have coasted and seen it out at 3-2 and probably not had a problem with it. I'm not terribly concerned about it. To jump ahead a little bit to the Pittsburgh game, like, you know, not scoring at all in that match, although they did. The referees just decided that balls that go over the line clearly don't count as goals anymore. Because that was clear on multiple replays that it hit the crossbar, bounced down. You see it bounce up from behind the line and out. It's not the perfect angle, the perfect view for us at home. But if the story is that the linesman was there on the goal line seeing it and he missed it, then that guy can go hop on the train track, get hit by a train, and get knocked into the water because he was a piece of garbage.
We're figuratively speaking, of course. We're not actually encouraging that.
No, do it. Jump on the train track and get knocked into the river.
Now, Steve, so I'm going to jump in here. Steven's going to defend the assistant ref and say, good call, blah, blah, blah. He did it on Twitter. I'm going to say, I think it was a goal, but there's nothing definitive. They didn't have an angle, so I can't say too much. Also, the Rowdies didn't protest very hard, if at all. So either it wasn't in and they know it, or that is a level of professionalism we haven't seen out of this club to run back and keep playing. And that's not an insult to them, but the players will like throw their arms up and then realize that like play is still going, and they didn't do that. So I have to say, once the emotion subsided, signs point to it probably didn't completely cross the line. Otherwise, there would have been a much larger protest from the team. But get goal line tech or something that will erase those questions.
Yeah, it was absolutely a goal. no question about it. I have gone in and updated in our show notes. I've updated the goal difference with an asterisk and changed the Rowdy's goal difference to 28 to credit them for the goal that they should have received. At the very least, there should have been a makeup call.
Oh, don't worry, Matt. There was a makeup call because that Rowdy's penalty kick was garbage.
They all even out.
You're right, and then Pittsburgh got a good penalty kick call later in the match, and so it really was all evened out.
28.
Look.
28!
Dan accurately summed up what my thoughts were. For one thing, we simply...
Dan agreed with your opinion, so you said it's accurate. 28!
Look, the fact is, we don't have an actual goal line view of that play. That's going to be the only definitive viewpoint that we're really ever going to see.
Evan Kerr said it's a goal.
Our midfield view, does it look potentially like there's some green? Maybe.
Goal.
But there has to be more than just a little bit because, physically, you can have some green between the ball and the line and it not be a goal across the line.
I don't know about you. I'm feeling 28.
All I'm going to say is I don't know if it was a goal or not. I'm not going to say either way. I'm going to give the benefit of the doubt to the one person on the field in the entire stadium that actually had the ability of making that judgment, which is the AR standing on the line.
Okay, I'm not going to go that far. Screw refs, all of them.
Look, I'm not saying he's right, and I'm not saying he's wrong. I'm not saying it's a goal, because I simply cannot make that determination based on a view from a camera at midfield. All I'm saying is I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt and move on.
Train, river, go.
That said, it absolutely reinforces the point that it's very sad that we can't get some kind of goal line tech. Mm-hmm. Whether it's cameras in the goalposts, whether it's the more sophisticated system that does the positioning. All of that stuff costs money. And probably like, you know, every year subscription fees for borrowing all of that equipment and whatnot.
The league has money. That should be just factored into the cost of operation if you want to have some integrity. But we can talk about this for the rest of the episode because there's nothing conclusive. Normally scoring early against Pittsburgh is or a bottom of the league team is the kryptonite, because then they have to open up. But they were all over us from the opening whistle. I don't think that goal changes anything. If anything, it would have been like they would have just came at us harder, and we were struggling to cope with or without that goal. And it showed, like, they just had the way to carve that defense. Granted, this team was exhausted, I'm sure. It really surprised me the lack of rotation on Lewis Hilton, who's just been a machine. And we just played Thursday of travel and everything. I normally that goal, like an early goal against Pittsburgh, like I said, is the key, but that goal wouldn't have changed anything, because that we were never really in that match.
No, it never felt like it. One other thing I think we can all agree on, since you guys won't concede the fact that I'm right and it was a goal. It's a very good thing that after the earlier incident involving the ball, that the field mic was turned off near Neil Collins when that call was not made. Because, my goodness. Not that Neil was wrong to complain about the ball. Like, this is... And the weird thing was, that wasn't the only game that had ball issues. Brian, restrain yourselves from chuckling, guys.
It wasn't just chuckling. There was going to be jokes upon jokes, but I can't tell them here.
I think we have an episode titled "Ball Issues." But there was
just
an early
year over 40. Don't bring us down with you.
Hey, thanks, SAG. I think it was Louisville and. Was it Louisville Sporting KC? There was a game, another game earlier on the day, where the cover was literally kicked off the ball during the match. Like, you had the extreme opposite. You had one that were the cover went flying, and one that was like the equivalent of a medicine ball in the amount that it was inflated. It looked bad, and Neil was unhappy. I can't imagine. I mean, I can't imagine. I can't repeat what I imagine Neil was saying when that. Incorrect decision was made by the entire officiating crew. I don't know. Apparently, do the Boston Red Sox own the Riverhounds, because everyone's just getting calls against Tampa Bay teams this weekend? I don't know. Ray should have had a run, too.
No. Jeez.
Yes.
Anyways.
Yes. The rule was applied correctly, but it's a crappy rule and it needs to be changed. Because now we're not even a baseball podcast. You can just throw the ball over the fence from now on if you want.
No, because that's a voluntary.
If you want Rays talk, Brett Rutherford does Raise Your Voice. Go listen to that. I'm sure he's got reasonable takes, because reasonable is not something we do on this podcast. And go listen to him. And he's great.
Nobody's coming here looking for reasonable. They're looking for yelling at refs to get hit by a train and get knocked into a river.
We don't condone any of that either. The ref was mostly fine. I mean, granted, not really, because I think my favorite quote, and wasn't from Neil, wasn't the ball quote. It was this guy hasn't officiated or refereed the second half at all. That was the one that I picked up that I liked the most there.
You could listen to D-Ray's Bay, you know, the podcast crew over there and the articles there. They're going to be breaking down the Kevin Cash reviews all winter long, but
I don't envy that. Neither do I.
What a tough series that was. Two walk-offs. Come on. Anyways, Tampa Bay rolls on. We still won the AL East, so they can suck it. You know, we were talking about Jordan Scarlett and, you know, how he has the own goal against Charleston and then has the unfortunate victim of being, like, sort of kind of nutmegged and in a way and kind of directly leading to what was the first goal in the Pittsburgh game.
I don't think you can blame him for that. That was a weird squirt through the legs. I just said that on purpose. Enjoy.
All I'm saying is he's had a bad week.
It's allowed. I mean, there's the Rongan curse in Pittsburgh that started with that first Open Cup match. I think that's what it is. I think he had a couple of, you know, rum and cokes too many and put a curse on us to never win in Pittsburgh. I will never get over the trauma of that Open Cup game because that was pretty early in the season. We felt great. Everything was going great. And then that was one of the worst Rowdies matches I've ever watched. And that trauma sticks with me. And it's usually why I just need to tell myself to stop watching the Rowdies in Pittsburgh because it's just never good for anybody's mental health if you're from the Tampa Bay region and a Rowdies fan. It's just a curse, and I hate that place. And one day, I hope, when nobody's there, no trains are coming through, a meteor destroys it.
While the referee's there. I'm not surprised by what happened. I went into the game really kind of thinking a draw was probably the most likely scenario based on fixture congestion, based on just, you know, past history, just, you know, gut feeling, whatever you want to call it. I really was hoping, like, you know, we set a new team record for consecutive wins. We set a new league record for scoreless minutes. We're you know, we've wrapped up the division earlier than ever, closing in on clinching home field for the playoffs and possibly the USL Cup final. A win against Pittsburgh just would have been to quote Arsene Wenger, it's almost like a trophy right there. We could do a treble, but no, it doesn't happen. And I have to go to work this week where I get a fresh new pack of paper towels manufactured by Highmark in my classroom every damn day.
I was really, really worried where you were going with your classroom and paper towel.
Like, you know what? You guys don't get paper towels. Just get COVID. Not having Highmark paper towels in my classroom.
I don't know if this episode should air because I think we need to lawyer up before we put this one out. That wishing like death and disease on so many people.
It's spooky season. What can I say?
So one thing that came out of this match, for a brief moment, and it's kind of weird about how long it may have gone, was the Rowdies kind of seemingly shifting to like a back four at one point during the match. Though it was kind of weird the way the circumstances worked around all of that. You know, Forrest Lasso got subbed out in the 79th minute. Antley was subbed out in the 70th minute. So it was kind of a weird formation because it was noticeable that we had shifted and the Antley was playing deeper than normal. But then, you know, basically both players that are kind of, you know, in those back four roles are suddenly off the field. So like the last like 20 minutes of that match were just kind of weird to watch. But the shift to back four, it felt like that was a thing. It really did look like that was a thing. And it was an interesting choice because we were losing this match, not winning it.
But my memory might be wrong, but that happened early in the half. It seemed like just immediately after halftime, we switched to the back four. And but it felt more of a move to try to stabilize a defense that was leaking like a sieve in the first half. But at what cost? And you're right. It became a little wonky going forward. I didn't watch the Miami game where we switched to a back four earlier this year. So I don't really have a comparison if this is better, worse, or what is going on. But it didn't really change the game. I mean, I think the only thing that changed that match was the addition of Deion Harris, and that was for a brief spell, not really like overall.
It's funny you mention that because Harris actually came on, I thought, at halftime.
He did. He
came on at halftime. But it's funny because our memory of it is that he played like basically seemingly a minor role to the point where it was almost non-existent.
He had that one brief run and created a couple chances almost immediately after half. And then after that, everything just, I think, went. I mean, Neil makes the money. The coaching staff makes the money. We're not in training or anything. But I just felt watching that game and what Deion was able to do early that maybe having Jordan Adebayo-Smith and some speed to get through that in the counterattack, because we were never going to have the ball, and having some speed in the counter would have been maybe how I approached the match. But again, I don't have the access to everything the coaching staff does. And by access to everything, I mean knowledge.
Yeah, it was an interesting choice. It didn't really work all that well against Miami earlier this season, which I think is where it gets kind of interesting, is I didn't know really where the incentive came for making that type of a change at halftime of a game on the road where you've already clinched, you know, a playoff role. I don't know. It was a kind of a weird, it was almost like it was a training ground move just for giggles. And it was just kind of a weird timing of doing it for this match at that moment, I thought.
So I was thinking about this earlier, and I meant to bring it up, but now may be a good enough time to do it. We talked about it on the pregame show that no one ever saw. We've talked about it a little bit tonight and probably, I think, a little bit last week on the podcast too, about the need for rotation because of 7 games in October saving guys up for playoffs and trying to give some guys who haven't played minutes to get them kind of caught up to game speed for the playoffs. But I kind of wonder, I kind of think, you know, with the playoffs locked up, with looking at least seeming likely that we could clinch home field for the playoffs and still working on getting to the USL Cup final hosting as well too. Are we doing a little? We doing a little like, you know, mad scientists? Let's do some lab experiments and see what happens, because we can hear some wrinkles we might want to throw in, like a back four. Like, you know, I know Leo playing central attacking mid probably more due to rotation and stuff like that, but also a chance to like, hey, let's try this out and see what happens. Let's see if this works. If it's absolutely horrible, you can change it up after a half if you need to, with some substitutions or some formation changes. But I kind of get the feeling that, you know, you might be doing a little mad scientist in the lab here. And I'm not against it. Like, try some things out in games to see how they work, because practice can only tell you so much. If you've got this luxury to do that, I'm okay with it.
I don't think there's mad scientist experience going on. We just had 2 games in like 3 days or 4 days, and you got to do what's available. And I mean, it wasn't unheard of, like we did in Miami. So I think it's just rotation and just trying to deal with a grueling schedule. Luckily we've had plenty of time from Sunday to, well, it's still kind of a short week, Friday to from Sunday to Friday, but plenty of time for the guys to recover. But this is the match. I think the Red Bulls match, especially after the last game out, is the time where you can maybe get some people some minutes and get some rest in. But I don't think we're going to be doing too much experimenting. Neil is pretty much said, each one of these is just a step towards the goal. The rest of it, it doesn't matter that we clinched a playoff spot or the division, or it only matters when we win that cup. And the easiest way to do that is to clinch home field advantage throughout. And that's what we're going towards. So I really don't think he's going to be tweaking too much. He's got a formula that works, and that's what he's probably what seems like he's going to stick with.
You said a grueling schedule, and I thought for a second you said Gruden schedule, and I thought this was going to go in a whole different direction.
No, we don't talk about him.
Yeah. Can you just say, like, just thank God for the Rowdies at this point? Like, we don't, there's so much stuff we don't have to deal with. All right. So, being near the end of the season, we've kind of switched up our some of our segments here. We're no longer worried about what other games are going on in the division, because at this point, it really doesn't matter. The Rowdies have won the division. Pittsburgh has clinched a playoff spot. Charlotte and Miami are not far away from locking up the last two spots. Charlotte and Hartford are not going to make the playoffs. Hartford's already officially eliminated, along with Red Bulls and Loudoun. Charleston's still technically alive, but it's not going to happen. So what we are keeping an eye on, and it's two games that are – one's game going on right now, one game going on later tonight. Memphis hosting Louisville City. The Rowdy's magic number to clinch the Eastern Conference, if my math works out, and they don't let me teach math anymore, so take that for how you will. The Rowdy's magic number is 7. Some combination of 7 points won by the Rowdy's or dropped by Louisville would give Tampa Bay the Eastern Conference regular season title. Right now, Louisville hosting Memphis. Memphis and the current score. Oh, Memphis just equalized. Let me pull up the match center here, see who did this. It's getting kind of late in the first half, or actually, no, we're into first half stoppage. Michael Salazar, assistant Alan Wynn. Yeah, like literally right before the whistle blew. So that game at halftime is 1-1. So if that result would hold, the Rowdies would only need 5 points. And we still have games against Red Bull and Loudoun to deal with. So. I looking at our games alone, I feel like there's at least 7 points in there somewhere. We want to get as many points as we can, though, because the second game we're keeping an eye on kicks off at 10 p.m. Rowdy's time tonight is Orange County versus Phoenix. Since the Rowdies dropped that game in Pittsburgh, they went level on games with Phoenix with 1 point behind. Phoenix is going to play tonight. Would be nice to see them drop some points to Orange County, give the Rowdies maybe the head in on the inside track, because our remaining schedule is not that daunting. It really isn't. There are some wins to be had there, and it's a statement for this team now. Okay, you've won this. You're likely going to win the Eastern Conference regular season title. You're going to be hosting all of your quarterfinal, semifinal games at home. We want that USL Cup final at Al Lang that we should have had last year. I want to see that happen. So it's not just a case of we're playing out the string because things are going this way. But I want, of course, the players and Neil aren't gonna cop to something like that. Like, they want those games at home. We know how much better they are at home. They know how much better they are at home. If you needed any reminder, like last week in Pittsburgh tells you why. Like, Pittsburgh is a playoff team. You do not want to be going. They wouldn't have to in this situation, but they don't want to go on the road for the Eastern Conference Final. They don't want to go on the road for the USL Cup Final. Let's keep it here.
If we ended up level on points with Phoenix, we would get it because we have the right, because we beat them.
Hasn't been officially confirmed yet.
Yeah, the playoff announcement page, okay, which I went and looked at this year, says once you get out of the, I think it's the quarterfinal round, then home and away is determined on points earned in the regular season. And no mention of a tiebreaker was there. We don't know if following the regular tiebreakers, which the head-to-head isn't the first tiebreaker anymore now. It would be the
total wins.
So I think we'd have a pretty good
It'll be close, shot. though. The fact is that there are no real tiebreakers outside of just, because again, the first, how you determine is based on total points. Tiebreakers do not exist on the official announcement, and it hasn't been confirmed yet. It's weird that it was not, yep, it was not confirmed. What happens if two teams finish same amount of points, same number of wins? How are you working this out? And it's weird that, like, they just haven't come out and said, here's what it's going to look like, just in case.
Basically, we just need to get the most total points and have Phoenix lose in the first round of the playoffs. That's the two scenarios.
I kind of wonder, is the league office maybe holding off on announcing, like, a hard and fast structure just in case a player for a team decides to, like, racially or sexual orientation lies, abuse another player during a game, and they have to concoct some scenario like they did last year where they get Phoenix to give up hosting rights because certain people were bad boys?
I hope we're not expecting or going down that road. So we'll just continue on here.
Not encouraging it, but, you know, we seemed like the whole world seems to be walking this kind of fine line between, you know, the sun is rising and holy crap, it's still the darkest timeline. You don't have to move
back to soccer. Do we have Twitter questions?
We have lots of questions. Well, but we do have some league and club news first. Number one, there's been more announcements about USL Super League. A president has been announced. Former MLS and FIFA player organization executive, Amanda Vandevort. I haven't had time to read too much up on her experience, but she looks to be very qualified. The one thing I noticed in there, they like are pushing more, like seem more committed to this. When the league starts in 2023, it will double the amount of professional teams. I knew they were saying earlier that was what they were shooting for. That was their goal. Now it seems to be like this is kind of a set in stone thing. So we'll keep an eye out for them. And news coming out just this afternoon, Neil Collins with his second Coach of the Month award for USL Championship, richly deserved. Although he'll put all the credit onto the players will put all the credits onto the fans. We can all celebrate this one together. Congratulations, you guys. We, therefore, are Coaches of the Month. I'm proud of us.
I don't think that's true. People have listened to our advice on this podcast. We know that's not true.
Is this why we're not allowed to do like gambling stuff on the pregame show? Because people might listen to it. We are objectively terrible at most things.
Anyway, what were you going to say, Stephen? We're going to roll past the betting stuff.
Yeah, right. So as far as the hiring of Vandevort, it's interesting because she's been in MLS in some very interesting positions. Like one of them was like fan engagement, among other things. So she's been kind of in a weird position where it's like she's done part player association type work. She's done almost like marketing, if you want to call it that, type of work. And then on top of that, she holds a B coaching license.
She coached college, I think.
B as in Bravo. Yeah. Like,
yeah.
You know, so there's no question about it. She's certainly well-rounded. I mean, it sounds to me like that would be a good fit for somebody trying to start a new league. It's still worth pointing out, they haven't even officially submitted yet the application to become the official D2 professional women's soccer league. That application has not happened yet. They haven't announced any potential interested parties for what this is, because the story that we got and the rumors that were happening behind the scenes was that this was kind of an unexpected announcement for a lot of people from around the USL. So especially considering that they're working on, and a lot of them are working on trying to get the W League started up, which of course right now has 20 confirmed teams for that semi-pro level starting play next year. You know, yeah, is it great to have Vandevort? That's a great, for no question. I think if you're looking to hire somebody and you know, go to a sales pitch, if you want to call it that, for some of these potential interested parties for ownership groups for buying these franchises and say, hey, this is the type of quality we're going to have in our front office, you know, running this league. as part of that sales pitch of selling a franchise. This is who you're going to be affiliating yourselves with. This is a great start for getting that process started. I think that's that, I think, is the takeaway here. But the fact is, we don't really have, there's really nothing else to talk about. That's kind of, it kind of bothers me considering they want to be playing in like, what, 18 months? And we don't even have anything outside of one person being hired. That kind of is nervous a little bit, nerve-wracking a bit.
That we know of.
Well, I mean, obviously within reason, but...
But I mean, yeah, I think she seems like a good fit. She seems excited for it. I mean, I feel like there's more structure in place than we know, because there was, I already forgot her name because I'm awful with names. The woman who was heading up the women's like development for USL before, like who announced the Super League. So there's obviously a whole department there, and they're just. But you're right. I think 18 months and not having too much is a little concerning. But with USL support and existing infrastructure, off like league infrastructure, not like teams, whatever.
Give me that Papadakis money. Papadakis.
Yeah, like
give me all that money.
I think there's that's a head start. I mean, they're not having to create a whole league office and do these things. That's already there. So I think they are a few steps ahead than what we know. But I'm still looking forward to hearing more news and seeing how this develops. But this is a promising start.
The one thing I'm looking forward to, and I've been tweeting this out, I haven't done it in the last few days, but I still feel the same way. Before I hear anything about teams that are being involved, I would like to hear what their plans are to not pull a NWSL.
Yeah.
Yes. And they don't even have players to protect yet. I think we need to see who, I think we as the fans or potential fans of the league need to be vigilant on who's being hired and do our diligence. And if there's somebody that might even have, you know, remotely connected to what happened in NWSL or might have some of those swirling around, we need to call it out. I think you can't, I'm so God bad with names. Vandervoort, was that her last name?
Yeah.
She was a player in college. She was a coach. She's been taught, like, she's not just business executive woman, which it was one, Lisa Baird in NWSL. The hire already speaks to, for me, to have some faith in that decision as somebody who's been on both sides of the ball and has been in different offices as well. So I think that is a very big step into addressing that concern.
I will say this. This Super League is going to have it. I can't imagine approaching this from the league's perspective of how who you go to for potential teams, what ownership groups, because if you think about it right now, you know, Loudoun United is, you know, an affiliate of DC, but Washington Spirit play several home games a year already in Loudoun's stadium. That's an NWSL franchise. You know, Louisville has an NWSL franchise. They have Racing Louisville. You know, some of these locations would be like your top pick. Like, hey, I would love to have a team in, you know, that's already affiliated within the ownership structure of my league, open up a women's team. And yet, it's interesting because obviously there's already teams in USL that already have NWSL clubs. And so it's going to be interesting to see who you go to. If it's even, I mean, I cannot conceivably think that USL could possibly poach either of those two teams in particular for going into the Super League and dropping out of NWSL. I don't see that happening.
I don't think they want that though either.
But if the option exists from an ownership perspective, I mean, owners can be wild cards too. So, you know, there's a certain level of you know, chaos that they can introduce into the system, I think, without a doubt. But, you know, it's I can't, like I said, I can't imagine approaching this from the league's perspective of where are you going to go for teams when some franchises basically already have teams and you can't really pick them, even though they would be some of your top choices.
Either, I mean, there's plenty of good, solid USL markets you can go to, and just other ones. I mean, there's plenty of other untapped women's markets that are there. But I'm very curious to see where they go. I assume she met, Vandervaart mentioned on her little Instagram live yesterday, 10 or 12 teams starting. So there's a possibility of more than 10. Which I thought was a little neat tidbit there.
That's okay, guys. It'll be fine. Queensborough, I'm sure, is going to get one of those women's franchises, and we're all going to just sit back and scratch our head and go, what the heck? And because, you know, life is full circle, and that's what's bound to happen at this point. Right, guys?
Okay. So, for listener questions. anyway. I think the show is over.
I concur.
This is done. I am done here. I have tolerated enough anti-Italian abuse and whatever else this show was. Not here, not on the show, due to Matt on Twitter. I can't work with this man anymore. I am hanging up and leaving. Good night. I said good day.
This is what happens when I start replying to tweets while I'm dealing with classes and I'm taking out my frustrations with them.
They're bad food takes, and we'll end the show now. Steven, just hit the outro. And,
yeah, I'm just here so I don't get fined. Thank you.
Read the script, hit the outro, let's go.
Well,
Billion.
The Rowdies play New York Red Bulls 2 on Friday night. It's expected to be a decent crowd for this game. The Rowdies have been pushing this a lot lately. With the Rays now out of the playoffs, there's less things to compete against for the eyeballs in Tampa Bay. So,
and your winless Tampa Bay Lightning. Suck it.
Anyways.
Okay, Barstool hockey fan.
Yeah, geez. So, again, it's going to be a big crowd. So you're going to, if you want to avoid the problems that you had this past home game with the long lines with, you know, potentially fewer gates open, I was like, get your butts in the seats quicker. Stop waiting to the last minute at 7 o'clock or 7:15 to get in the stadium. Get in there early, for the love of Pete. Anyways.
Or just pregame show.
Exactly. Yeah. You'll probably see our pretty faces on the field, you know, in front of that, probably on that nice concrete surface that they have out there. That's probably going to be pretty close to where we're going to be. Potentially.
Possibly.
But yes, so Tampa Bay Rowdy's playing New York Red Bulls 2. Should be a good, you know, again, it should be a good outcome with fan support. Guys, give a quick score prediction, because we all know we're going to win. But what is your final? Matt's bringing up some fingers. He did it first. He's going 3-1.
I'm going to echo Mitch. 4-1 to the effing lads.
It's my last regular season home game. I will not be there. I will be in St. Pete next Wednesday, but I won't be at the game. I'll be checking it from Janus Landing as I take my daughter to a concert. So, yeah, let's have a good one for my last regular season home game.
So we got 3-1. We got 4-1. I, on the other hand, think that the Tampa Bay Rowdies are going to get back on their shutouts, and I think it will be a 3-0 match. I think we get ourselves out of this weird funk we've had with a lot of goals scored in a lot of weird ways, and I think we get the shutout.
I thought you were going to say that the Rowdies were going to lose.
No.
It felt like it. All right, let's wrap this up. Thank you, as always, to our good friends at Wolfface, at Radio St. Pete, and at the Shamrock Pub, where there has been some good watch parties going on lately that I have not been able to attend because of reasons, and I'm pissed about it. I'm dying to go back out there sometime soon. Thank you to everybody listening tonight or listening later. Please continue to share, subscribe, rate, and review the show. If you'd like to take this to the next level and make this weird, then you can get in a relationship with us via Patreon, starting at $1 a month. Best way to support the show, different levels, all the way up to $10 or beyond. Thank you again, Amanda. We greatly appreciate adding you to the Unsubs Patreon family. I'm going to go get my hands on all the merch stuff I have sitting around and create a little package to send your way. Thank you to our sponsor, Roughneck Scarves, the official scarf supplier to MLS, USL, and US Soccer. Get custom scarves for your group or team at roughneckscarves.com. And if you're tired of the same old uniforms and cookie-cutter templates from Nike and Adidas, if you're looking for a unique, completely custom kit for your youth club, Sunday league squad, adult, or even pro team, say an all-white kit with some green and gold hoops on the sleeves, Icarus FC can help you create the kit of your dreams at an affordable price. Let them help you design your new custom kit today at IcarusFC.com. Gentlemen, I'm disappointed. I'm sad the Rays are out of the playoffs. It was kind of a cool atmosphere the other night, even with all the transportation and parking and congestion and everything. I'm sad they're out of the playoffs. I am happy that when I leave work on Friday afternoon to head up there, I don't have to worry about getting stuck on the bridge or over the bridge or on the highway or in some St. Pete somewhere. But I'm looking forward to the game. I'm looking forward to getting this weekend started off. It's going to be a busy weekend for me, and I'm glad to take a little time to not do anything else for a few minutes. I will see you guys there. I will see the rest of you people there. Unless you're not there, then I won't see you. But I will see you otherwise. My eyes still work, even though I'm old. All right, let's close this up.
All right, everybody. Have a good night, and go Rowdies.
It was a goal.
The Rowdies run here, the Rowdies run there, they kick the ball around. The Rowdies run here, the Rowdies run there, and then they fall on the ground. Oh, the Rowdies, the Rowdies, the Rowdies are kicking the grass.